Every year in January, I think it is, the president gives the State of the Union address. Now, if you're like me growing up, we only had, the four channels, 3, 9, 18, and 36. And he usually hogged up three of them four channels. And I never could figure out how he couldn't just be on one channel. And if you wanted to watch him, you could. And if you didn't, you could go somewhere else. As I've gotten a little older, I've come to appreciate a little bit more of the State of the Union address. He could mail me a copy and I'd read it for myself, and that would be okay. I think just the way the calendar worked out, that today would be a good day for us as a church to kind of assess sort of the State of the Union. Now, kind of a sermon, but not exactly. Not real big on summarizing where we've been, more of where we're headed. We had a plant manager when I first went into management at the bakery, who what we did every month was we would go to Charlotte and have a manager's meeting, and it was just the way they did it, had done it before I got there. They'd take an old overhead projector, for those of you that are old enough to remember overhead projectors. I don't even know if they exist anymore. I think we've got one around here somewhere. Thank God those days are gone. They would flash up on the wall every one of our divisions, their sales this year, this period, and last year, this period, and are you up or down and why? And then they'd put up white bread and grain bread and buns and about every item. They'd put up the category, and we'd go through that, and this, you know, for 30 some different divisions, 10 or 12 items, and by the time you were done, it was just horrible. We got a new plant manager, and so they had a meeting and they started through that same routine. And Bob was not one who was very good at hiding his feelings. His office, all the offices at the bakery were upstairs, and back in the day, if you knew what you were doing, to get in the bakery, all you had to do was stick your key, not in the lock, but in between and wiggle it and open the door. You didn't have to buzz or anything else, and more than once, I've wiggled the door open and opened it and heard him ranting and raving upstairs and closed the door and went back and got my car and went somewhere rather than walk into that mess. And so, we were having our first meeting with him, and they were going through that, and you could just see him. I don't know how he did playing poker, but he couldn't hide his emotions very well. And finally he erupted and said, he didn't say it anywhere near as nice as I'm about to say it. He said, "I don't care what you did last year. I don't even care what you did last month. What I want to know is what you're going to do for me this month." And I think that's more kind of what I want to address this morning. We can spend a lot of time talking about last year, the last 69 years of the church. Can't change them. What we can do is look at where we're headed and how we're going to get there. So this morning, I want to take and I'm going to bury you for a few minutes in some numbers. There's a method to the madness. I want you to see two things. First of all, I want you to see the challenge of what we are surrounded by at 3476 Poplar Kent Road. I want you to see the magnitude of it. A lot of us have lulled ourselves to sleep believing we live in the Bible Belt and everybody loves Jesus and everybody's going to heaven. Unfortunately, that's not true. It's way far from the truth. In fact, only about a third of the people in our community even claim to be Christian. If you're like me, you kind of have an opinion about those that claim to be Christian. If a third claim to be Christian, well, you guess is actually Christian. There's some other numbers that go with that that'll make you seriously doubt that third that says they're Christian. So I want you to see the magnitude. But I also want you to understand this morning the great opportunity that we have. When Jesus said that the fields are white to harvest, he must have been looking around us. They are white and getting whiter. The lost are pouring into this area in droves. One of the fastest growing areas in the country. And so this morning, I just want to bear with me and give me a minute. I know numbers bore some of you to tears. That's okay. Again, I think it's important that you see the magnitude. This has become my second Bible. I don't know if Rhonda, I don't think she pays me any attention, so she probably doesn't know how much time I've spent in this little booklet I've made for myself. We have access through the Baptist State Convention to, and I've talked to some of you about it before, just beaucoups of demographic and information about our community. And this is my several hundred pages book of charts and reports and analysis and you name it. Pretty much if you want to know about the area around us, give me a little bit and I'll dig it out of here, because it's probably in this little book. Everything from, I can just about tell you what they had for lunch, or what they're going to have for lunch even. It's pretty scary, and some people get mad when they see this information, but the fact is it's out there. Every time you click on something on a web page, every time you fill out a form, every time you sign up for something, somebody puts it in a computer somewhere, you're being watched. And so you might as well, that's just the world we live in, and I don't know how you're going to get out of it. But let me just share with you a little bit about what's going on around us in this community. And everything, I'm kind of operating off of this basis. Where there is no vision, the people perish. We've got to see. We've got to open our eyes and recognize, again, the opportunity and the challenge. It's twofold. We have been given a huge opportunity and blessing. To be quite honest with you, if you look around us, it's an opportunity, but it's also a challenge. If you take and you draw a radius around this church, there are practically no churches and only one or two Baptist churches within any area around this church. There's not even many of any denomination. And then, second of all, we were told that we are to go and to be witnesses in Jerusalem and Judea and Samaria. And the truth is, over the years, most of us, most churches, have really concentrated on Samaria. We've really been, for example, look at how in Baptist life, Lottie Moon always gets a bigger offering than Annie Armstrong. I mean, much bigger, because that just something about that appeals to us. And that's great. But I heard Jerry Falwell one time when I was in Lynchburg describe how he started out and how Thomas Road was built. And he took a map of the Lynchburg area and drew one small circle and said, this is Jerusalem. And then he drew another one and said, this is Judea. And then he just said the rest of it is the outermost parts of the world. And he set out to knock on every door and to speak to everybody in his Jerusalem. Now, granted, 60, 70 years ago, that would have been a little easier to do, but that was his ambition. And so I think that to some extent we have, most churches have taken our eyes off of the Jerusalem that God has given us right around us, and focused a lot on Samaria when God had the foresight to lead Mr. Turner almost 70 years ago now to look out here and say there are no churches in this area, and that there needs to be one. And probably at the time, probably there were some people who thought he was crazy, because I'm just guessing that in 1948, there wasn't a lot out here. I've heard when Shirley Deal was living, talking about Pauper Tent Road being dirt. She used to talk about, when they talk about widening, she says, I've been hearing that since it was dirt. And Shirley's been dead now probably, 10 years, and it's still not widened. So, I'm sure when that idea came along, there were people who thought there didn't need to be a church out there. There's nothing out there. Man, if they could see it now, if they could see the change. And so God has placed us here and then brought Jerusalem to us. He's brought the world. When it comes to Judea and Samaria, the outermost parts of the world, I can take again on I was going down Speedway Drive last night. I was sitting, and again, if you're interested, I'll sit down one day and show you. It's an amazing program, and I can pull up by, I can, you tell me what you want to know. You want me to find all the people who speak Hebrew, who are 35 to 45, who make $75,000 to $100,000 a year, who have children in their home, who, I don't know. You can pretty much give me your parameters, and I can pull you up a map, and we'll go, and we'll look at it, and I can tell you who lives there. I can tell you, you know, if they have children, I can tell you their ethnicity. You wouldn't believe the ethnicities up and down the streets, just right around this church. Jerusalem has become the outermost parts of the world. The area I'm talking about, just kind of give you an idea here, 5 mile radius of this church is 94,000 people, and growing leaps and bounds. 94,000 by 2027 in 10 years, 106,000. Honestly, as I looked at that, that's too big an area. For one reason, geographically, because of the way the roads lay. That actually, a 5 mile radius actually goes up past Parkwood Church, over past Pitts, and y'all know how the roads are around here. That's just, you know, that's kind of out of, I mean, I'm not saying, you know, some of you drive further than that, but that's just kind of a, where the way the roads lay around here, that's kind of odd. But I want you just to get an idea of what's going on in our sleepy little village around us. Another way to look at it, within 5 minute drive, and with the way traffic is, it's kind of funny when you do that and you ask the thing to pull up a 5 minute drive to see how small that is because of how long it takes to drive places anymore. But just in a 5 minute drive is 11,000 people. The majority of people in that same area drive 30 minutes to work. So 5 minutes to church is nothing. And so just to give you an idea again, just what's happening. But to be realistic, what the area I'm talking about is in this little box right here. And I know you can't see it very well, but this is the area I'm going to be talking about this morning. This is 29, right down 29, to over about S&D, around down Wyckoff. Wrong neighborhood. Down Weddington Road, Rock Hill Church Road, on down to kind of, if you know, right in there is where Kevin and Jackie, right there is your house, right in there. Kind of out a little bit down Weddington Road and around, back around like Patricia up, down around the Catch Eva Drive and back in there and back out. So it's really kind of what I consider to be the easy drive to our church without having to, it's not 73 where you have to go around and come down International, even though I don't think that's unreasonable. It's just, it's my box. I drew it. I'm happy with it, okay? I kind of drew it the way I thought people, you know, I know people would cross 29, you know, across Poplar Tent Road, but I used it as a line, as a barrier. So that's the area I'm talking about this morning. In that little box are 4,000 people, 3,913 people, and it is growing exponentially, as you can see. And again, obviously the growth is are some estimates of what's going to happen around us. You know, you may look at that and think that's not, from 39 to 45 in 10 years is not very much, but you got to realize that box only represents about 45 square miles. It's not that's a really, it may look big on that map, but it's really a small block. And percentage-wise, that is a major growth pattern for an area. And furthermore, if you go back to that and you think about it, the growth in that box, is a whole lot of it is right here, from here over. A lot of this is pretty stable. And so to have that kind of growth in about half of that box, really, is pretty amazing when you look at it. 1,600 households, 5% of them are below poverty level. We don't think about people being below poverty. We look around out here and we see million-dollar houses. We see fine apartment buildings. We see all that going up. 5% of the people live below poverty. And what I want you to listen for as we look at some of these numbers is, where can we minister? Where can we help people? What can we do? When 5% of those folks live under poverty level, that's pretty high number when you look around at what's being built and what's going on. We just don't think about poor people, poverty level people living in Concord. Archie and I were talking this week about the homeless situation in Concord. And he kind of blew me away telling me some things about where some of the areas where homeless folks are living in the woods and everything else that I don't see them because I don't hang out in the woods. And so we have a lot of folks around us if they're below the poverty line, they're hurting. They're hurting people. Again, that's expected to continue to grow. 30% of those folks live in multi-housing, apartments, condos, those kind of things. Third of those people in multi-housing. Again, a huge ministry opportunity to look at, and that number is going to grow. That number is going to continue to grow. Nationally, the number is about half the people live in multi-housing, and so that number is going to continue to grow. And again, as we've talked about, Larry, several of you, my mind just went blank for a minute, went and heard some of the challenges of reaching the people who live in multi-housing. It's a different world. Part of it's because of laws that have been put in. Part of it's just because of the mindset of those who live in multi-housing. And so one of the things as the convention as a whole is trying to do is find people to be missionaries to multi-housing, that the convention will pay your rent and pay you go live in one of the apartment complexes, because if you live in them, you have a different level of access than somebody who's knocking on the door. And so it's a big issue across Baptist life anyway of reaching multi-housing. Average age in that block is 37 years old. I don't know what that does to y'all, but that makes me feel old. But the average age, because a lot of y'all live in that block, and you're not 37. But that's the average age. The breakdown, if you look, the biggest group, 5 to 17. 5 to 17, that's the biggest group. Ministry opportunity, a chance to make an impact on young lives. The other number that's a little surprising to me is the 65 and over. Again, we a lot of times make the wrong assumption that the older you are, the more spiritual you are. You obviously hadn't hung around some old folks. That's all I can tell you, because some of them have learned new and exciting ways to be ungodly. I'm sure Debbie works in home health. I'm sure she can tell you some experiences in dealing with saintly old people that will curl your hair. And again, a whole different set of opportunities. Again, I would dare say that if you look, a lot of those under the poverty level are in this bracket. I didn't actually look at that number. It just popped into my head. And so they're sitting there. And not much chance to get out from the poverty level because they can't go get a job. They don't have any other sources of income. And so they're kind of stuck there. And so we've got that opportunity to work with. Married. 59% of them are married. 40%, 39% of them are single moms. Ministry opportunity. They present, they've got struggles. Some of you have been there and done that. You know the struggle, you know the battle, you've been there, you've done that, or your daughter has done that, or your granddaughter has done that. That's a battle, and there's opportunity there to reach them. It's kind of surprising to me that when you look in that block and you consider a lot of the development and stuff, that large a percentage is single moms. It's kind of surprising. I pulled this up for for a church down towards Mount Pleasant not long ago, and it was almost that high, except it was single dads. And I still hadn't got that through my head yet. I don't think I've ever seen a report for any area where single dads were so high. But again, it presents an opportunity for us. You know, I would ask you to think about that for a minute. What are we doing that would appeal, not just appeal? Our job as a church is not to appeal, but our job is to minister to. What do we do, what do we offer that would minister to, that would help, that would show the love of Christ to a single mom and her child? That's the challenge in front of us, folks, coming into this year. What do we do that shows the love of Christ and would aid and assist somebody who's living under the poverty level? Those are the questions that come into my mind when I look at these numbers. Again, great opportunity, but a great challenge and responsibility to look at these things and to think, how can we do that? 30% of them have never been married. 7% of them are widowed. This is one that kind of caught my eye. The divorce rate in that block is a good bit higher than it is anywhere in the state, or a state average. Not necessarily anywhere in the state, but divorce rate is very high. What do we do? What do we offer that shows the love of Christ to that family, to that husband, to that mother, that wife that just went through a bitter, ugly divorce? Some of you have been there and walked through that. You've been there with your family, with your children. That's our job. This is our Jerusalem. Our Jerusalem. Not somebody else's. The government's not going to do it. It's our responsibility. And so, what you know, those are the questions I think we have to ask ourselves. Out of all the households in that block that have children under 18, half of them are growing up in single-parent homes. I don't know about you, but that, of all the numbers I'm going to put on the screen this morning, that one broke my heart. Half the children in our neighbor, in our Jerusalem, are growing up in single-parent homes. You know, some of you have done that. Some of you have been there. You know how hard that is as the child, for the child. What are we doing that shows the love, that helps them, that shows them the love of Christ, that shows those kids? There are a lot of children who grow up, and I mean, this is proven. It's common sense if you think about it. There are a lot of kids who grow up in that environment who grow up thinking, you know, I've read studies and stories of young children who, when told that, you know, when God is explained to them as Heavenly Father, they get upset, they get bent out of shape because of what Father represents to them. You know, Father's not a wonderful word to everybody. Those children, and again, those children, and this is a whole different set of research, but the children who grew up in single homes, the pregnancy rate among girls is through the roof. The incarceration rate among both groups is through the roof. The divorce rate for them is through the roof. You know, there's pretty much not a good statistic for children who grew up in. Please, if you're a single mom, you're good. I'm just telling you, you may be the exception. I'm, you know, cool. I'm just telling you what the general rule is for kids who grow up like that in single parent homes. And you may be a single mom, great, who raised a wonderful child, and there are some sitting here. I know that. I'm just telling you, you are the exception. Thank God for it. Proud of you. Keep up the good work. But the majority of those who grew up in single-parent homes don't fare as well. It's an opportunity for us to impact our difference. 40% of them will be single moms in the next 5 years. Again, some of you could stand up and testify to the struggle of being a single mom or your child, your daughter, your granddaughter. I'm not in any way, you know, trashing, bashing single moms. Thank God for them. Most of them, you know, do a phenomenal job. Yeah, way better than honestly most of us men would ever do if we were put in the same shoes. We know it. My point is, there's struggles that they're dealing with. Obviously, I think most of you know this is the case. Majority, almost 70% is white in that block. This is a, I don't know who made this word up. You know, I can't even hardly say it. Religiosity. I've asked somebody for a specific definition of the word religiosity. Let's get down to where the rubber hits the road out of these folks. Let's forget their marriage and all that stuff. It's important to know. But let's talk about I don't know why we didn't just use the good old word spirituality, because that's about what religiosity means. It's their openness to religion, their openness, their religious IQ, I don't know. That kind of gives you, I think when you see how this number is measured, it will back up and help you understand what religiosity actually is. The religiosity of that block is at the very bottom scale. It is pretty much as low as you can go and still be on the scale. Right here in the good old Bible Belt, Concord, Cabarrus County, that block is, you know, if you look at the chart, it comes up in red. Actually, it's that low. It is below the state average. It is below the national average. Again, right here in, you know, good old loving Jesus, Jesus loves me, Concord. Let me just show you how that number's figured, just to give you some idea. Of those in that block, roughly a third say they are conservative, evangelical Christian. As I said earlier, if a third say they're conservative, evangelical Christian, what do you reckon the real number is? 20%? But just only a third even claim to be Christian. Only a third. So that means where you live, if I'm assuming this morning that pretty much everybody in this room is Christian. Where you live, think about this for a minute. It's, in particular, if you live in that block I drew, if you live there and you say you're a Christian, the two people on the side of you are not. Or say they don't, won't say they are. Think about that as you go home today. That as you go down the road, go, Christian, not, not. Christian, not, not. Christian, not, not. And just let that visual sink into your head for a moment. That only a third even claim to be Christian. Then you wonder why we have some of the things going on in our community we do. Then you wonder why some of the things are in the news and on the paper. Now, take those numbers. Keep this in mind, that a third claim to be Christian. The other thing is, do you consider yourself to be a spiritual person? 43% say they're spiritual. More people say they're spiritual than say they're Christian. I don't know. But again, think about that. Not even would you go so far as to say you are a Christian, a Christ follower. Just are you spiritual? And whatever that means, you could be worshiping trees. Are you spiritual at any level? Are you spiritual? And 4 out of 10 are all that say they're even spiritual. Think about that. You know, 6 out of 10 people, when asked, "Are you spiritual? Do you think anything about God, things of God?" Whoever got the, not even narrowing it down to say the God of Christianity. Just are you? Do you have any mindset of God at all? 6 out of 10 went, "Nah." I told you there was an article the other week that I read that a guy has come up with a phrase for himself. He says, "I'm not an atheist, I'm an apatheist." In other words, they ask him his opinion of God, and he says, "I just don't even think about God anymore." It wasn't that he said, "I don't believe in God." He said, "I just don't even think about God." I've told you, the largest group, the fastest growing group of spiritual people. You ever seen one? Ever done one of those checklists? Says what religion are you? And you know, Baptist, Christian, whatever. And down at the bottom, the answer is none. The fastest growing group is none. 25% of Americans say they are none. We are not spiritual. 40% of the people in this. Let's look at it again. 60% of the people in that block say we're not even spiritual. 14% say they enjoy religious television. If they'd asked me, the number would be slightly higher because most of the religious television's crazy. But anyway, here, look at this. 30% say, a third say they're conservative, evangelical Christians, but only 17% of them say it's important to go to church. Am I the only one who sees a, wait a minute, in that number, that a third say that they're Christian, but only 17% of them say, we'll go to church. Religious services are important to us. How about this one? Even less than that, 14% say my faith is really important to me. How can you report I'm an evangelical Christian and turn around and not say, shouldn't that number be exactly the same at least? You know, if 32.5% said they're Christian, shouldn't 32.5% say their faith is important to them? What I tell you, that 32% is not real reliable, to be honest. That's the ones that say they're Christian. That's what we're dealing with in that block. That's our Jerusalem, folks. Again, the opportunity, the challenge is what I'm trying to get you to see. It's not like the lost, the unspiritual are not around us. They're falling off the trees, folks. You know, they're just falling off the trees. Years ago, we had a guy in our neighborhood who, let's just say, he was a target of a lot of jokes. And he was roughly the age of my grandpa. And my grandpa and some of his buddies decided it would be funny to go into his garden. And they took and they blew up a bunch of red balloons. And they tied them all over Otis's tomato plants. And when Otis came home from wherever he had been, he pulled up and saw tomatoes hanging everywhere on his tomato vines, and he just thought he had hit the jackpot. Yeah. That's literally the way our neighbor, it looks like red balloons tied on the tomato plants when you consider the opportunity we've been given and the responsibility we've been given right here. When you look at the religiosity, the spirituality of our Jerusalem. Here's some of the things that they say they're interested in. You know, again, when you look at that list and you think, well, they're not very spiritual. And actually, there's a lot more I could have added to that list. I just picked a few. It's kind of curious to see that people who say religious services are not important to them, and they're not very, and their faith is not very important to them. One of the things they're most interested in are Bible study. Bible study. Hang on to that thought. We'll come back to that one. Bible study. But these are the things, and I will tell you, by the way, addiction support, I don't think it matters where you pull up the map in America. That's at the top of the list anymore because it's such a problem. And by that, I think the majority of people are talking about what do we do when it's one of our loved ones, support us, you know, help us know what to do. Weight loss. You know, this is the first year in many years that weight loss is not the number one New Year's resolution. I can't remember for the life of me what number one is, but it's not weight loss this year. I guess we've decided we're skinny enough or we've just give up. I don't know. It is still number two. These are some of the things, again, religious spiritual groups from a group like that. How are we going to do it? What are we going to do about it? I could stand and, you know, again, my second Bible here, I could stand and just bombard you with bad news, to be honest, depending on how you look at it, unfortunately. Here's where it rises and falls. I want us to begin in 2018. We've got to pray. We can do everything else in the world, but if we don't bathe it, bury it, swamp it, soak it in prayer, those numbers are going to continue to get worse. I'd love to be able to stand here next December the 31st and tell you if it's just a tick that those numbers are turning, that those numbers are changing, that there's a slight improvement in their religiosity. that we're making a dent in those numbers. I want to challenge this morning every Sunday school teacher, every class, every meeting. I don't care if it's a committee meeting, a deacon's meeting. I don't care what it is. First thing, start with prayer for our Jerusalem. Can I make it really blunt? Can we spend as much time in prayer for our Jerusalem as we do sick aunts Lulu's? Can we spend as much time in prayer for the lost as we are for the sick? Nothing wrong praying for the sick. But as somebody said, we're spending more time praying to keep the saints out of heaven than we are the sinner out of hell. Aunt Lulu, if she dies, is going to be in the presence of God and going to be happy forevermore. Some of these folks we're not praying for, if they die, they're going to bust hell wide open. And that's our Jerusalem. And that's our responsibility. It's on us if people in that block die and go to hell. That's our responsibility. That's my responsibility. And listen, I'm not, please understand, I'm not throwing rocks at the congregation this morning. I'm your leader. I'm your pastor. If anybody gets hit, what is that old saying? I'm rubber, you're glue, bounces off of me and sticks to you. It comes right back to my feet as well. We've got to reach our Jerusalem. It's going to begin in prayer, in prayer meetings, prayer walking, personally, at home, when you ride down the road, pick a neighbor, pick a house, and begin to pray for the people in that home. You can get an idea. If you want a copy of that map, I'll give you the streets. Ride up and down those streets and pray for those people. Some of you sit at home and pray for those streets. You take the phone book and just grab them up. I think about the Grinch this time of year. He stood on the mountain one day with the phone book and went down the list and said, I hate you and I hate you and I hate you. We ought to take the phone book and go through and I love you and I'm praying for you and I got to pray. If we skip this, everything else just, we may as well be the Moose Lodge. We may as well be Electrolux trying to sell these folks vacuum cleaners because we can't do it. We can't do it on our own. We can't do it without prayer. Intentionally, purposefully praying for our neighbors, the people we don't even know. I put something on Facebook that's got some interesting responses last night. We've spent a long time trying to reach people with the church. We need to reach them with the gospel. Church doesn't change people. The gospel changes people. We got to spend some time in prayer for this situation. We didn't get here overnight. We're not going to get out of it overnight. We've got to pray. I would encourage you, and hopefully my plan is to help organize this myself, but you don't have to have me hold your hand. Pick two or three people and say, hey, let's get to church early and let's go in one of the rooms and let's pray. Let's meet somewhere this week for lunch. Let's pray. Come over to the house. Let's pray. Pick 3, 4, 10, 50, and pray. You don't have to wait till we say it's prayer meeting. I bet if one of your children got sick, you wouldn't wait till Wednesday night to pray for them. Our neighbors are lost. Let's pray. Second thing I want to do to help deal with that is, and I can't think of what else to call it, is to put together a group of people who may not necessarily would be a deacon or something, a young person here, a man, a woman, an old person, whatever, a group to, I'm going to confess something. When I first came here, I almost broke my stupid neck at that front door. If you are a guest with us today, please be careful. There is a nasty step when you go out that front door. It's painted yellow now, so hopefully you'll see it. But I went strolling out that door, and just right out into space. What I lacked ended up face first in Poplar Tent Road wasn't much, because I wasn't familiar with it. Today, I can walk through these buildings blindfolded, because I've been here long enough that, you know, it's familiar to me. And sometimes I don't see things. And sometimes I don't recognize things. But to put together a group of people who can help me be eyes and ears, I don't have any authority, just to meet and tell me, okay, this is what's going on, this is what we, you know, to bounce ideas off of each other. You know, the Bible talks about the wisdom of many minds. And so some of you I'm going to be asking to do that, to help us to say, okay, and I mean evaluate everything, you know, from the preaching to the music to the color of the carpet to the stripes in the parking lot, you know, anything that is hindering us sharing the gospel, anything that is helping us, hindering us from reaching our Jerusalem, anything we need to be doing to reach that Jerusalem, you know, we need to be looking at. And I just can't be everywhere at one time and see everything. You see things, and a lot of times people see things and assume I see them or assume the deacons know them. You know your deacons. They don't know. they have no clue. Debbie's going to see something Martin wouldn't, because she's going to look at something different. She's a female. She's going to see things differently. I remember years ago, I thought the women's bathroom looked fine. I'm like most men. If there's a toilet in it, I'm good. And several of them pointed out how ugly the wallpaper was in the bathroom. I didn't know what bathroom had wallpaper. I didn't know. But they see things differently. And so I said, we need to, I want to get a bigger group together to help see what we need to do, what we can do to reach that. A couple of things we got to do. We got to continue to work on the debt of that team, parking, going through our buildings. And again, if there's anything, again, we take that for granted sometimes. I just heard Tom Rainer talking about that last night. How many churches we take for granted the facilities God's given us. I remember. Some of y'all will remember when I came here, the basement looked like Joseph's coat of many colors. Every room had some hideous form of carpet, and it was probably pretty 100 years ago, but it had some hideous form of carpet. They were all painted a different color. It was bad enough. Stevie Wonder walked down through there one day and went, ooh! It was bad. So one day we were having a deacons meeting, and I said, come on, guys, we're going to take a field trip. And honestly, a lot of them had never been downstairs. They didn't know. I mean, that's mostly the children's classes down there. They didn't know. And walked them through downstairs and just started opening doors, and we got to the end of the hall. I said, would you put your grandchild in one of these rooms? And, nope, we need to do something. You know, it's amazing what seeing stuff does, and so we need to do that. Those are a few things that we need to work on. We need to make good, again, back to the facilities. We need to make use of the fellowship building, the gym that God has given us. Again, if 30% of our people live in multi-housing, that's where we got to go, folks. You know, I'm not real smart, but if the fish are biting worms, don't put a minnow on the hook. They live in multi-housing. We got to reach multi-housing. And we have a great open door, already been working on forming a relationship with the folks down at Crown Point. It's under, as I've told you, maybe it's under new ownership, and they are more than happy to have us come in. Again, it just, anything we do, something they don't have to do, and it, you know, they're thrilled to death. We want to come down here and have a party for the kids in the pool area. Great, you know. Because that's something that makes us look good, and we didn't have to do anything. You know, that's the way the apartment people, the managers look at it. And so they're willing to let us have Bible study in their clubhouse area if they ever get done working on it. They would love for us to come. And I've talked to Ryan over here. That Ryan's been to Dave Ramsey's financial management class. The folks at the apartment complex are just thrilled to even think of having something to help them better manage their finances. And while you're there, you tell them about Jesus. You know, backyard Bible club, instead of having Bible school here, go down there and have it with them. Have it in the apartments, you know, where they're at. If the fish are biting in 10-foot water, you don't fish where the water's 2-foot deep. And the people live in those apartments, let's go where they are. Oh, that's not brain surgery. We just got to figure out what to do and get there. So those are some of the things that there. Looking at that data, we need to look at that and say, how can we show the love of Christ to some of those groups? How can we show the love of Christ to the 5 to 17-year-old? We can curse the darkness so we can turn on a light. We look and we see the newspaper and we see the reports of what's going on with teenagers. And, we moan and groan and wonder what's wrong with them. You tell what's wrong with them? They don't know Jesus. Plain and simple. We can say it's the school system. We can say it's the parents don't discipline. Whatever. The root cause is sin, and they don't know Jesus. And they're not going to get it from their schools. And based on those numbers, they're probably not going to get it from their parents. So it's our job. We've got to look at those numbers and look at those reports and dig into our community and figure out, how we reach them. Understand something here. I'm not talking about how do we get people in church, or how do we make our church bigger, or how do we make our church grow, or how do we make our church have more offering or anything else. I'm talking about how do we reach people for Jesus. The problem is the church for years has focused on those things. How do we get people into seats? If we get them to know Jesus, everything else will take care of itself. We've got to present the gospel. That's plain and simple. We've got to quit trying to reach them with the church. We've got to start reaching. They don't trust the church. I don't blame them. The gospel is what tells us it won't return void. The gospel is what changes people's lives. One of the other things, I'm going to call them go groups for growth and outreach. I asked you the other week, several of you have signed up. One of the things that you'll find in my little book is that one of the things that people in the bracket, the demographic bracket around us, they're leery of the church. They've heard some of the things we've done. I mean, not us, but the church as a whole. But they trust their neighbor. And so what I want to encourage and what we want to try to develop is to get some of you to open up your homes. This has kind of developed and grown from a seed idea to something different, especially if you live in that block. Say, hey, to have 3 or 4 other believers over and invite your neighbor to come. Have some refreshments or a meal or a Coca-Cola. Sit out back and play badminton and then talk about things of God. The demographic in our neighborhood, in our Jerusalem, they like that idea. That's how they want to hear things. That's how they want to learn. They want to learn on their terms. They want to learn that they can trust Christians before they know they're going to trust Christ. That's one of the challenges I think for us. And here's what it boils down to: people coming to know Christ. And then people becoming disciples. How will we know when we've arrived? How will we know when we've accomplished our goal? Not when we've got you know, 47 different ministries running, and we're going to the hotel complex every other day. But when people are coming to know Christ, I don't find anything in Scripture that tells us anything other than that is our goal. And then making those people become, helping those people become disciples that make more disciples. I would just, I may anger some of you this morning, but I would question whether or not we're really a disciple if we're not making disciples. Because disciples make disciples, who then go make disciples, who then go make disciples, who then go make disciples. That's how we'll know that we have accomplished, I believe, and begin to make a difference in our Jerusalem. When people are coming to know Christ, I don't care where they're baptized. Let me make that clear. I'm not talking about our Baptist baptism numbers. I should change that word baptisms to salvations. I don't care if they get baptized in Mabel's backyard down there at Hidden Pond. I don't care, where they, I don't care. Baptized in their bathtub, in their neighbor's swimming pool. I don't care. Are they coming to know Jesus Christ? And then are they growing in their faith? That's our task, folks. And I think part of the reason that the Church of Jesus Christ in America has failed is we hadn't realized that. Our task has been to see more people in the pews, to see the Sunday school grow, to raise the offerings, to do a lot of things. When our task, our responsibility, is to see people's lives changed, to see them coming to know Christ. It's what Jesus said our commission was, to go to our Jerusalem and to make a difference. And if we don't do that, the fact of the matter is, we're not a Church of Jesus Christ. We may as well be the bingo hall. I spent a lot of time talking to other pastors and other churches, and I asked them this question quite often. If things continue on the path they're going, where will your church be in 5 years? I asked some deacons that the other day who were talking to me and wanted some ideas about finding an interim pastor and what they ought to do and what kind they ought to look for. And I said, well, let's back up. One of the most important things you can do before you start figuring out where you're going, and I've used this illustration with y'all a lot of times, first thing you got to do before you figure out where you're going is to look on that map and say, where am I now? You are here. And they had all these great plans and all these great ideas. And I said, but if you keep going like you're going, where will you be? And you could see the color run out of their face. And their mouth fell open. And they said, we'll be closed. We'll be closed. We won't exist. It won't matter what we do for a pastor. It won't matter who we bring in to lead our church. In 5 years, at this rate, we'll be closed. It's a question we have to ask ourselves as well. Where will we be in 5 years if we do nothing to reach our Jerusalem? The day of the old church way of doing things where your children came and your grandchildren came and just kind of, I remember years ago, my grandpa, when he went to Bethlehem and the church started growing, pastor over at Aquadale come over and asked him, said, how'd you grow a church down here in Stanley County? My grandpa looked at him and said, biologically? That's not the case anymore. Actually, the number of children in our Jerusalem is declining. It doesn't work that way anymore. Our children are growing up, and taking off and going their own direction. Some of them never to return to the church. We got to go out into the highways and the hedges. Wasn't a sermon, but I want to ask musicians to come this morning. I'll ask you to bow your head for a moment. I hope you see this morning the huge opportunity, the huge responsibility that we've been blessed with here, that we've been challenged with here. 30% say they're Christian. Think about that. 7 out of 10 people in our Jerusalem won't even say they're Christian. Only 15% even say they're even spiritual. We've got a great responsibility and a great opportunity. And I believe one day we'll stand before God and give an account for what we did with our Jerusalem. It begins with prayer. It ends with prayer. I'm going to ask Hertha just to play. I'm going to ask you to stand with me this morning. And if God's moved on your heart with the burden, with the magnitude of the opportunity we have in front of us this morning, I want to invite you to come and to kneel and begin that prayer today. God, our neighborhood around us is dying and going to hell. They're lost. By their own admission, 70% are saying, I don't know Christ. Over 80% of them say, I don't even care about spiritual things. If 70% of our community had a disease, we would be up in arms. We would be screaming at the government, at the Center for Disease Control, do something. Find a vaccine. Find a cure. 70% of our neighbors don't know Jesus. Over 80% of them say they don't even care. In 2018 can be the year we make a difference. It begins in prayer. I'd be sadly amiss if I didn't give you an opportunity this morning. Maybe this morning you're here and you're part of that 70% that would say, I don't know Christ. I've never asked Him into my life, into my heart. I don't have a personal relationship with Him. You'll come this morning, I'll show you how you can know Him. How you can know Him personally. I'm challenging you this morning to not so much pray for your church, but to pray for your neighbor. For those lost around us. Those that by their own words say, I don't know Jesus Christ. I challenge you this morning to say, God, use me to make a difference. The opportunity is huge. The responsibility is through the roof. People's souls are at stake. People's eternity is at stake. Those single moms, those teenagers, they need somebody to tell them that Jesus loves them. They need somebody to tell them that Jesus died on a cross for them. it's our Jerusalem. If we don't do it, who will? Father, I come to you tonight, today, with just a knot in my stomach, an ache in my heart. God, as I consider the fouls within just practically walking distance of this church, who by their own words deny knowing you, by the thousands who say we don't even care, we don't even think about spiritual things, by the thousands who say they're Christian, but their faith doesn't even matter. Lord, it's almost sickening. But God, you've placed us here. You gave Shuford Turner and a handful of others 70 years ago the vision, the desire to put a church on Poplar Tent Road. Because, God, you knew. You knew that those 70% were going to be there. You knew that they were going to need the gospel. You knew that they were going to need to hear about Jesus Christ. You knew they were going to be moving here from New York and New Jersey and Pennsylvania and California and Nepal and Sri Lanka, China. They were going to be coming right here. God, I pray this morning, you'll put a burden in the heart of this church. God, that we'll make a difference. We won't be content with being a light beside the road, but we'll carry the light of Jesus Christ into our Jerusalem. God, I thank you for what you're going to do. God, I thank you for those that are going to come to know Christ. I thank you for those that are going to become followers of Christ. God, I thank you for those in this church who maybe have never had a position, never taught a class, but are going to step up and be leaders as we reach this community for Jesus Christ. God, go with us as we leave here, hours from a new year. God, when we stand here this time next year, let us be able to give you praise and glory for what you've done through this church, through her people, in our Jerusalem. Well, it's in Jesus' marvelous name I pray. Amen. Let me remind you, there won't be any service here tonight. Be careful, be safe, be warm. But we will see you Wednesday night, back to a regular schedule Wednesday night.